All right, welcome, friends. Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com, and we have a very powerful interview, a guest that we've been trying to get on for quite some time. His name is Kevin McGarry. He is the president of Every Black Life Matters, which you can find at everyblm.com, and he has a very powerful, I think, critical message for America about racial healing and how we can live together with freedom, free choice, educational choice, nonviolence, and all these other solutions without having our country divided into hatred and intolerance and all these other horrible things. So, Mr. McGarry, it's an honor, sir, to have you on. Thank you for your work, and welcome to the show.
Mike, the honor is all mine. It's really an honor and a privilege to finally have met you and to now be on your show. It's just a great honor for me.
Well, hey, look, then we're both honored because I've been pouring through your website and, you know, I heard about your book. It's called Woked Up. People need to check that out. And you've got a YouTube channel called Y'all Woked Up University that people have checked out. But give us a quick introduction, since this is the first time we've ever spoken and our audience, some of them might be new to your work. So give us a quick overview of what you do and what it's all about.
Yeah, so we are Every Black Life Matters, and actually, you know, when you think about it, a lot of folks think about BLM, and they think, oh man, what a horrible organization. Nothing good came from BLM. But actually, EBLM, Every Black Life Matters, came as a result of BLM. So if there is any good that has come from BLM and their machinations that tore up the country a couple of years ago, it's our organization.
Yeah.
We saw the violence, the hatred, the carnage, and the destruction of you know, private property in our major metropolitan areas a couple of years ago as a result of the George Floyd murder and the way that he was murdered for 9 minutes and 40 seconds. We all saw with horror and grief, and everybody had different ways to go about sort of trying to reconcile that. Within our inner cities, we had BLM actually leading the charge, along with their stepbrethren, the Antifa organization, which is, you know, by definition, a white supremacist organization. When I said that a couple times in some of my speaking engagements, they say, well, why do you say that? Well, and I'd say, well, you know, here's the deal. 99% of Antifa, or Antifa, however you want to say it, literally are white. Okay,
so they wear masks, they wear hoods, and they carry guns and intimidate people.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on.
Underneath those masks, they're white. Now, here's the thing: they did a study and they found that the overwhelming majority actually live in suburbs. So here's the deal: we have white folks coming from the suburbs to partner with a black organization to burn down black and brown businesses. I mean,
unreal.
Try to wrap your mind around that.
No, only in our world today could that ever be possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and they get hundreds of millions of dollars in donations from corporations like McDonald's and Nike.
Oh, absolutely. So when you see that, and that's why I call them white supremacists. If you were really committed to burning down businesses to make a point, you would stay in your suburbs and you would say, look, you know, let's start burning down my apartment building. Let's burn down the suburban business across the street. Let's just burn some stuff down. Why do you go to the black areas and burn down black and brown businesses? I digress. Anyway, when we saw all of this, we said, look, there's a lot of folks out here, including some pastors that were encouraging their parishioners to go out and march with BLM and partake in all of their craziness. And we thought that was a bridge too far. So my co-founder and I, Neil Mauman and myself, we said, why don't we start a real alternative that's moral, faithful, and righteous? And so people of faith, pastors, other communities can join us. And as we stand truly against every form of racism and every form of injustice. And so we formed Every Black Life Matters as the alternative to BLM. Now, what we did, you know, the pillars, if you go to our website, what we actually stand on are pro-life from conception to the grave, you know, nuclear family, fatherhood, school choice, nonviolence, criminal justice reforms. We still have more of correcting of Joe Biden's 1994, his criminal reform act that we need to really correct.
Right.
And so, you know, we stand against all of these things. And the way that we came up with those things, we just went to the BLM website and saw what they stood for, which was Marxism. Oh, that's the other thing we stand for, free markets and capitalism, which with BLM, if you went to their website at that time, it said it was Marxism, it was anti-family, it was anti-father, it was anti-man.
Yes.
It was all the things that would really further destroy the Black community as opposed to help it and encourage it and support it and propel it forward. So so we've been at this now for just about 2 years. And some people say, well, why did you have to borrow any of their moniker? Seems to me you're still dividing. You say every Black life matters. All lives matter. Every life matters. And then I bring to their attention, that's exactly what we're saying. All lives matter. And then they look at me like, excuse me? So let me explain that. So here's the deal. When Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, said, we don't want the word to get out, but we want to utterly exterminate the Negro population. She did not say Negroes and Asians or Negroes and Hispanics. She said Blacks. I want to exterminate Blacks. That was the business model. And so, unfortunately, Planned Parenthood has done a masterful job to the extent that Blacks make up approximately 40% of all abortions today, even though we only make up about 13% of the population.
Right.
And Black women only make up about 3% of the demographic that they can go after. So when you consider those stats, you consider how appalling it is that up to 90% of all Planned Parenthoods are within walking distance of Black and brown communities. You know that Margaret Sanger's strategy, because she was a diehard racist and a eugenicist, is really decimating the Black community. So here's the deal. When we see all other ethnicities being born at a much, much higher rate and Blacks being born at a much, much lower rate because we're targeted by Planned Parenthood, all we're saying is, look, every Black life matters too, T-O-O.
Yes.
And so if we can get, you know, and so basically what we're saying is, yeah, all lives matter. Every single life matters. God didn't make mistakes. He gave us all, you know, different paint jobs for his own purposes. And we should be thankful for that. And we have no reason to think that there's any one, any one ethnicity that's more important or better than the other. So we're saying the same thing. It's just that we are illuminating the fact that we're specifically targeted for extermination by Planned Parenthood by virtue of our title, Every Black Life Matters.
And that is absolutely true. And by the way, I think the naming of your organization is genius. I think it's pure genius.
Oh,
I think you nailed it. And anybody saying, oh, it's divisive, they don't get it. That you're bringing people together. And what you just said is so true. I want to add to it that people of color are targeted and have been targeted for generations globally for extermination. Yes. And, you know, I'm like my organization, naturalnews.com, we're one of the few that has repeatedly, you know, covered this and documented it and produced documentaries and so on. And we talk about the vaccines in Kenya that were the WHO approved vaccines that were laced with infertility chemicals to decrease population. We talked about the Nixon administration and the science advisor calling for food exported to Africa from America to be laced with infertility chemicals. That was 1971.
Wow.
Right. And we talked about how in Chicago, the Chicago nurses group meetings that tried to figure out why is cancer disproportionately affecting Black men and Black women. And they spent a couple of weeks digging into it, couldn't figure it out. You know, vitamin D deficiency, right? Because nobody tells them, get vitamin D. You know, the pigmentation in your skin is a natural sunscreen. You're not generating the vitamin D because you're indoors, you're not getting sunlight, and that's why your cancers are more aggressive. So we've been covering this, and I hear silence on these issues from most corners of both mainstream and alternative media as well. It's just been baffling to me.
Yes, yes. And the other thing is you haven't talked about, and I know you do cover because I watch and read Natural News, but one of the, you know, all of Fauci's machinations, his schemes literally I would say Fauci is, in my opinion, he's very, very similar to Josef Mengele. Really, his experiments, grotesque.
Absolutely.
And what he did with AIDS and just terrible, terrible man. I mean, he's given all the accolades by other folks who have a different persuasion politically. But
look what he did to those I think it was the New York black kids that are the orphans, right?
And absolutely.
He murdered them with medical experiments.
Exactly. Exactly. And then the AIDS stuff, of course, Robert Kennedy brought all this stuff out. And he's still, I just applaud his work. But so absolutely, blacks are targeted. This all, like you said, it's been going on for generations. And so all we're trying to say is, look, hey, every black life matters too. So just let us live to the same level that every other ethnicity lives. And some people come up to us and say, well, what do you expect Planned Parenthood to do? They're just trying to meet the need. And I say, lose me with that. I mean, that in itself is insensitive and it's racist. Okay. So here's the issue. If Planned Parenthood really just wanted to cater to women, because women's health care is important, the demographic research has already been done. They can leverage the research that's been done by a Walmart and Target. They know where their women across the country congregate. And if Planned Parenthood was sincere, they'd go ahead and just put a Planned Parenthood at or about every single Walmart or Target in the country, because it's just women, right? But they won't do that. They still want to target the black community and continue to disproportionately target and then exterminate black babies.
It's unreal. But now on top of this, and I love the fact that you counter what I'm about to describe here, but there's a media and cultural narrative that is deliberately trying to drive division to such a degree that they're almost trying to set off a race war in America.
Yep.
So there's this demonization in a lot of culture now, demonization of white people against black people, right? It's like they want both sides to feel demonized and hated so that they hate each other.
Yes.
Instead of teaching any kind of unity or healing or how do we work together, it's got to be deliberate, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. So, a lot of people don't really understand why over the past few years, a lot of these race issues have really been ginned up. Everybody just seems on edge, agitated. And where did all this come from? And why is it now at such a fever pitch? Now, here's the thing. We have in Ibram X. Kendi, a guy who is literally part of the World Economic Forum. He is one of Klaus Schwab's disciples. And if you know anything about Ibram X. Kendi, he's the guy that wrote How to Be an Anti-Racist. Well, it just so happens that the World Economic Council and all of those who are part of the World Economic Forum are all white, and Kendi is a black man. Now, what's interesting about this is Kendi and his studies that talk about how to be an anti-racist, he goes in and he basically agitates within corporate environments all of the ethnics against the white, workers in those environments, and basically, essentially divides the room and then, basically confirms that whites are complicit with racism because of the 1800s and this and that. I don't know all of the justification, but it doesn't unify anything. It fully divides. It further erodes trust amongst coworkers. It's really, really corrosive. It's just a terrible thing. Kendi does it because he's part of the World Economic Forum. If you know anything about the World Economic Forum, their goal is to basically, essentially, do a great reset. Now, they're not going to get to a great reset if everything is hunky-dory in America. America's really the last outpost, if you will, for freedom around the world. So if they can get America through the guy that they currently have occupying the White House, to throw up his arms and say, hey, the streets are on fire. There's nothing I can do. Come on, you in. Come on, WEF, go ahead. Let's do the Great Reset, because, you know, we need a global presence here so we can really bring our streets under control. So that's kind of what they're trying to do. Fortunately for us, it hasn't worked to any large degree. I mean, we did feel like our streets were never going to get back to normal during the crazy, tumultuous 2020. Mm-hmm. But things calmed down when after the election, and things, you know, have been somewhat normal since that time, other than the over-the-top crime rate, you know, letting criminals out without bail, and all of the other craziness that we're seeing in our urban areas.
Well, yeah, and don't forget that Trump just announced he's running again, so I'm pretty sure the old BLM teams are going to get warmed up. You know, they're warming up the Molotov cocktails as we speak. There's going to be more insanity if Trump, you know, continues this, and he probably knows that. But I think they're just going to roll out the same teams again. And a lot of us in alt media, we suspect that these so-called Antifa people, that many of them are just bussed from city to city.
Oh, they are. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I've actually seen videos of that. Absolutely. No doubt about it. Okay. They're bussed from city to city. All of the bricks and Molotov cocktails and those things are staged in these various corners throughout the city, and they go and get their supplies, and then they do their dirty work.
Right.
And this is not a viral movement, folks. This is contrived, very strategic in a lot of ways, and it's specifically designed to decimate black and brown inner city communities. And now, that, to me, is racist.
Let's talk about some solutions here. And now I understand that your organization, again, folks, the name is Every Black Life Matters. So it's everyblm.com. You offer corporate training that actually teaches racial unity and doesn't, you know, try to shame people for their skin color or lack of color. Let's say for the whites in the room, they're not just go to a corner and feel guilty. You know, you don't do that. What do you offer for corporate training?
Yeah, so what we saw is with Kendi and with Robin DiAngelo, which, you know, the white fragility lady, they've been going around the country and they've been amassing tens of thousands of dollars per visitation, if you will, and, you know, in these corporate ballrooms, boardrooms, rather, and essentially have been, again, dividing, guilting, shaming people based on their immutable skin color. Okay, so we decided, look, we need an alternative. We need, you know, a fair, non-ideological, so that, you know, with Kendi and DiAngelo, you're going to get a heavy dose of Marxism. You're going to get a heavy dose of leftist progressivism. You're going to get a heavy dose of just wokeism generally, okay? And so if you're not woke, you're going to be, you know, sort of castigated as a dissenting voice in the room, castigated as a supremacist and a racist. And it's just all bad. So what we do is we say, look, you know, white supremacy and racism does exist. Okay. We actually need to go to the roots of that and discover why it exists and how it exists and how to get rid of it. And so just like you would if you were to completely destroy major edifices or structures within a city, you would say, hey, we need to completely demolish, implode, and just completely erase the foundations of that large structure over there. You call that raise. You want to raise the building. So what we call our training is RAZIST, R-A-Z-I-S-T. And because we think that the only way to appropriately deal with racism, if you're sincere, is you must go to its roots and foundations, and you must completely demolish, implode, and deal with the roots and foundations of racism and white supremacy. And then we can figure out a way forward. And so we provide all of that to our corporate partners who would want to actually keep the workforce still unified and working together, trusting one another, and having mutual respect. They can call us, and we'll gladly go to any workforce in the country and help with those types of issues.
So
it is racial sensitivity training. You'll get trained and certified, and so we actually certify you as well. your entire
room. Well, that's great. That's something maybe a lot of our listeners could take advantage of because they're business owners. They could hire you to come in. Do you do this nationwide or just certain regions? Or
yes, we do. Nationwide. We'll go anywhere. Yes.
Okay, cool. And then, so a question then, when you go into these environments, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, I'm just guessing, but in my experience, the most intolerant people in any corporate environment are the wokesters.
Absolutely. That's actually a great, great point there, Mike. I appreciate it. So here's why. This is actually the genesis of my latest book called Woked Up. The subtitle is Finally Putting an Axe to the Taproot of White Supremacy and Racism in America. Now, I didn't quite know what to expect when I started down this journey to write about, you know, the whole woke movement and what it is and what it's not. But I knew I needed to start it with Karl Marx. Everybody that understands what wokeism is, you understand that it's rooted in Marxism. Okay. So actually, all wokesters can be, you know, really are revolutionary Marxists. That's really what they are.
Good point. Yeah.
And so they're actually, you know, providing, you know, Karl Marx's dream of having revolutionary Marxists around the world really sort of, you know, coercing and subjugating, if you will, the rest of society. And that's the kind of tactics with cancellation and censoring and all of the pejoratives and all of this. That's what they're trying to do, right? Is try to, you know, basically subjugate or cast, you know, do away with, if you will, dissenting voices. So anyway, what I started with was Marx. And then I realized something. I realized that, wait. Marx literally had a mentor. And his mentor was Charles Robert Darwin. So, when you look at Darwin, because, you know, all of Marx and Engels, their early works, they fully dedicated it all to Charles Darwin. Because they basically infused, they took all of Darwin's works and his major philosophies and infused it into their economic and social, you know, philosophies and that kind of thing. So anyway, so here's what happened. So when I went to look at Darwin's work, I took a look at his first book, and it's on natural selection for the preservation of most favored races. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. And that's literally what it is. It's the title of his work, you know.
Really? It's not Survival of the Species?
No. It literally is. Let me give you the literal. It's The Origin of the Species by Means of Natural Selection, or The Preservation of Most Favored Races in the Struggle for Life.
Real? I never knew that that was the title.
It's actually a long title and sort of a sub kind of title. The others parts in italics. But anyway, yeah. So he talks about these most favored races, but he actually literally delivers on that in The Descent of Man. So here's the important takeaway from that. Here you have a renowned scientific mind who is an anthropologist, world renowned. And he makes a distinction for the first time for somebody of his caliber that there is such a thing as racial distinction. Like there's favored races, right, compared to other races. Before that, people just thought, hey, we're all, you know, God or, you know, some other cosmic force made us all. We're all equal. But he comes out and he says this. Then in the second book, The Descent of Man, he doubles down. He says, look, we white European Caucasians, Aryans, if you will, we are of a supreme intellect, and we're much more resourceful as compared to any other ethnicity. And therefore, we need to protect, you know, our genealogy, our pure heritage. And oh, by the way, blacks, blacks are, you know, I already gave you my theory about evolution. So this is what Darwin was saying. He was saying, so blacks, if you look at them, they're still trying to climb the evolutionary scale. They are literally subhuman. They are gorillas, apes, and savages. Jeez. This is in his Descent of Man. So literally he is, by the way, if you haven't figured it out, he is the taproot of white supremacy and racism, because in those two statements, he equates whites as being supreme, superior to every single other ethnicity.
And then he takes God out of the equation.
Completely takes God out of the equation. Absolutely. Because, you know, well, I mean, he took God out of the equation when he did his evolutionary theory. I mean, look, it was Big Bang. We all, you know.
So he says, you're not all created by the creator.
Right.
You are different species, and some of you are subspecies. So basically, he just laid out apparent justification for eugenics.
Absolutely. So, you're getting to my next point.
Okay. So, all right. I'm ahead of the game, huh?
Yeah, you're great, Mike. I really appreciate it. You're just leading me perfect. Okay. So here's what he did. He says, look, so this is the deal. Whites are supreme. Blacks are subhuman. Apes, savages, gorillas. Okay. So now we have white supremacy and racism. It's been instantiated because we have the first scientific voice that's renowned and important and believed around the world that this is what is. Okay. So he grounds that. And then he says, and then his younger cousin, Francis Galton, his younger first cousin, says, look, and Francis Galton was one of the pioneers of early statistics. He was a genius. He was really, really excellent statistician. And he says, look, cuz, I've done all of the graphs with ethnicities and their populations around the world. And he says, look, we're going to be in a real tough situation here as whites, because every other ethnicity is actually populating at a much faster rate and much more than us white Europeans. And you know that we have superior genes. So, I mean, even with your survival of the fittest, you know, this is going to propose some problems for us, because we have all of these other populations that are actually going to take over and start to intermingle with our pure genes, and therefore we have a big problem. Okay, so they went through this scenario, and they said, look, why don't we come up with an actual scientific justification for getting rid of some of these other subpar ethnicities, right? And so, Francis Galton decided to come up with this term called eugenics. It's a Greek term. And it literally means well-born, okay? So what it means is those of us that are well-born, we're protected. But, you know, those who are born with any deficiencies or any people who are poor or slow, and definitely all other ethnicities, they can be summarily exterminated because, you know, they're basically impacting the earth, which is finite, and you know, they're going to pose a big threat to our pure white, Aryan Caucasian supreme genes, okay, in essence. So literally, they made up eugenics out of whole cloth. There was no scientific justification. It was literally made up because of white supremacy. They wanted to preserve their supremacy, okay? And it absolutely was racist. Any and all other ethnicities can then be exterminated. So if you want to know what happened after that, just look at Hitler, okay? Hitler pointed to Darwin.
Right, he borrowed that philosophy, right.
Absolutely. He pointed to Darwin, not Marx, ironically. He pointed to Darwin as justification for exterminating the Jews. Lenin, Stalin, Mao, all of them pointed to Darwin and Darwin's work. Okay. So literally, when you came up with eugenics, getting rid of these other ethnicities, and then when it came to the United States, we had Margaret Sanger, who started Planned Parenthood, and she started sterilizing women, especially poor women, especially black women, and then doubled down later and said, look, we don't want the word to get out, but we need to exterminate blacks, okay? Because she was a eugenicist, and she felt that, you know, blacks were, you know, they could be exterminated, no problem. And so that's where all of this came from. Now, if you juxtapose that to these shrill voices we have today with these women, you know, going up and rampaging about, you know, I need my body, my choice, I need my abortion. What I say to them is, look, okay, your body, your choice. Now, if you really are that committed to abortion, then you have to own where it's come from. And then I go through an explanation, a full explanation of what Darwin and Francis Galton did, the fathers of eugenics. And I say, so it is literally white supremacist and racist. And you can't define abortion any other way. By definition, that's what it is.
But that's so what's extraordinary is that a lot of black women today have been recruited by white supremacy to exterminate their own offspring.
Exactly. So you could imagine my phone was blowing up on the Dobbs decision and I was not having it. I'm telling you, I went 5150 on all these shrill, hysterical women. I said, if you only knew that literally you're trying to assert that it's white racists coming after your rights, when literally you are a white supremacist and a racist and there's nothing you can do about it unless and until you say, I reject abortion. If you accept abortion, that's fine. It's still, even some of your listeners, probably a lot of your listeners, are pro-abort right now. Guess what? If you are, that's fine. You could, if you want, even after I've given you the complete history of this and it's fully documented, it's inarguable. You can't even argue it. Okay, so if you want to hold on to your, you know, my body, my fine, then own it. You are, by definition, a white supremacist and racist, and there's nothing you can do about it until you reject it. And I'm not being mean or casting pejoratives. That's just the way it is.
No, just matter of fact, right.
It's the way it is. Yeah.
Well, let me bring in this piece because it's relevant to everything you've just said, which is that, you know, Paul Ehrlich and the population bomb and the whole effort of global population control. What I've come to realize in researching this and writing about it over the years is that the globalists don't believe there's too many people in the world. They only believe there's too many black and brown people in the world. You see?
Wow.
Right. And you look at the depopulation efforts. Now, what are we looking at right now? Engineered destruction of the global food supply through fertilizer takedowns.
Yeah.
And energy infrastructure that makes farming possible. Who does that affect? Is it going to starve an average income American? No, they can pay a little bit more for food. Who can't pay more for food? Somebody living just on the edge of survival in an African nation or in a South American nation.
Exactly. The poorest nations in the world are the ones that will be most affected by the depopulation goals right now.
You, for some of those areas, if you take away 2% of food production, you get something like 20% starvation. So it is a magnified effect of reducing availability of resources. And then you think about people like Bill Gates pushing the stratospheric aerosol injection, which is global dimming of the sun. And you know, if you dim the sun globally, you reduce crop yields all across Africa and the Middle East and Central and South America.
Wow, that is unbelievable. I don't know how this... Well, so the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I know you know about Gates's dad. He was a eugenicist supreme, okay? And Bill and Melinda Gates, they're big funders of abortion around the world right now. They are, you know, modern-day eugenists. And... really, you can't help, you know, if you look at all of the machinations, including the stories you're just telling us, that you can't help but just surmise then that he is a sincere racist and a white supremacist. I mean, he really believes that, you know, he's supreme and that they, you know, a lot of these guys do.
Yeah, they do.
Who are part of the WEF and all of this. They say, hey, you know, we're going to depopulate to about 500 million people. And we get to, you know, basically enjoy the fruits of the planet ourselves. And if there is ever a definition of supremacy, that is it. I mean, anybody that would just do that, that's evil.
But it's interesting that, and kind of horrifying, if you were to try to determine which 500 million people do they want to have remaining, you know, it's going to be the World Economic Forum type of people, which is a lot of like European whites, let's say.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, the City of London and the Vatican controllers and whatever. But it's not going to be Somalis. You know, it's not going to be from, you know, all these countries across Africa, the Middle East or Central and South America. It's not going to be that, except they might want to bring in, you know, how they like to do with virtue signaling. They want to have a token representative to exploit for their purposes of claiming that they're diverse, but they're not.
That's right.
They still want to command everything and control everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So the third and fourth world countries will literally be decimated by these crazed schemes, if you will, of these globalist depopulationists. And it's really tragic. And we should be calling them out on their racism. I mean, I'm surprised nobody ever calls Gates out on his manifest racism, just based on his what he believes in and his ideology. We need to be, I think we need to be a little bit more aware of how this manifests in our current, you know, in our current society. And that's what we actually provide people when we train them and certify them. We provide them proper context for how to view these things that are happening around the world and happening within our workforce. So as these things start to come forward, you have the ability then to say, I think that's you're actually, you know, walking the line of racism here. This is not fair. This is not right. This is not just. Oh, well, it's just DEI. Yeah, I understand what you're after with DEI, but the way that you're trying to incorporate it here, it's racist. I mean, it doesn't do you any good to be racist against somebody else just to help some other. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, right? It is. But look, let me share this with you. I've been shocked through my whole life to discover how many dark, powerful forces there are in society working to keep racism alive. Because, see, when I grew up in the Midwest, and when I went to grade school and then high school, I played sports and I played football and ran track. And of course, we were all diverse races. You know, we were Black, white, Filipino, Asian, everything, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought racism had been solved, like it was a thing of the past, right? Because we were taught in history, you know, look at this mistreatment. This is what happened in the past. And thank God we're more progressive now. We've solved these problems. And the way I grew up, we didn't have racial division and animosity, not in my high school, not in my experience, not in my social group, nothing. And then later on, it was like somebody brought it back. It's like, what are you doing?
Right.
Why are you bringing this back?
Right.
We already solved it once, or at least, again, that was my perception. I understand that there are still pockets of crazy, insane racists, but that was not my experience growing up.
And now it's brought back with this idea of systemic racism across America because, by the way, of our purported American history, because our forefathers and our founders were systemically racist. So, you know, here's what we help people to understand. Actually, it was our forefathers and our framers, our founders and framers, who framed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. It was those two documents that literally set Blacks free. Okay. Now, there were factions that were absolute racists of that day. That particular faction of people lived in the South, and actually they identified themselves as one political party. It just so happens that that particular faction of people are still here today, including that political party.
Yep.
And so if we want reparations, I'm willing to have that conversation with you. Whenever you have a reparations conversation, we always go to the source of the harms. It's never overlaid onto everybody now that's a part of society. No, 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 no. If the source of the harms is still here today, of course, this party is, then we need to, let's all go down to the Democrat offices and say, look, you owe Blacks reparations. You have billions of dollars in your coffers. Come on, let's make this right. I'm willing to do that with you. So,
yeah,
so, but every time for some reason, Mike, every time I offer that, you know, I get, you know, giggles, but nobody takes me up on it. I don't know why.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? And the Democrats also had a militant arm just like Antifa today, except back then it was called the KKK.
KKK. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And notice how they went from white hoodies to black hoods.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant observation. Absolutely.
They just changed the color of the masks.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. Exactly right.
But still, I mean, but think about it, they still always believe in disarming the black man in America, right? Taking away the ability of black families to defend themselves against aggressors.
Now, you know, after the Civil War, they tried to do that, actually, because there were a lot of blacks that literally fought in the Civil War, okay, yes. You know, against the, you know, the Democrats in the South, okay? So, you know, they were all part of the abolitionist movement, the Republican Party and the GOP that started at that time. And so, you know, after the Civil War, during Reconstruction, they actually tried to gum and disarm, you know, the black fighters. And yep. Fortunately, the blacks at that time, you know, during Reconstruction, they started to do a little bit of ownership of some lands and this and that, small pieces, you know. Nothing. But they did have a lot of antagonizers coming to their house trying to disarm them. And what they did is they took their shotguns and held it up and said, no, get off my property.
Yeah.
It was the only thing that helped keep blacks free. Is them exactly. having the arms available to them that they took off the battlefield.
You know,
so this is a part of history that's sort of massaged over, but this is an important part of history. Our Second Amendment is absolutely critical. I mean, it's proven critical time and time again, not just here, but around the world. But here, it proved critical for black families who came off the battlefield of the Civil War, and it helped keep them free.
There's a kind of Rorschach test about this, and I was in a group one evening. This was several years ago, and they were doing this Rorschach test, and they said, we're going to say a phrase, and I want you to say the first thing that comes to your mind. And the phrase was black man with a gun, and what I responded was patriot, and other people said criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm wow. I said, you've been brainwashed. You've been brainwashed.
Wow, I mean, that's good, Mike.
Yes. You know, when people say, well, aren't you afraid of black men with guns? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Gun owners are the most law-abiding citizens, regardless of race, regardless of right. gender, regardless of anything. Even gay people who have guns and, pro-Second Amendment, LGBT, they're the most non-violent people on the planet.
Amen. Amen. That's good, brother. Wow. That's so awesome. What a testimony. Yeah, so I mean, we need to continue to, you know, I hear that Biden today came out and says we got to get rid of these, you know, these assault weapons, you know, and you know, because of this nut job, you know, another mass shooting, I guess, that happened overnight.
Yeah.
It's terrible and it's tragic, but you know, the reality is when you do have when you're a country that's free like ours, you do have nut jobs that that, you know, They rob, they steal, they get a hold of firearms, and then they, you know, they do crazy stuff. But that, you know, we're law-abiding citizens. We have nothing to do with nut jobs here. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just because somebody that's crazy got a firearm and started to, you know, shoot up the place doesn't mean that law-abiding citizens should be disarmed. I mean, literally, you're playing into the hands of criminals, because criminals never, you know, they're not legal. You know, firearms, you know, gun owners. So why would you then go to legal gun owners and say, oh, because we had the shooting, we want to take away your firearms, when it was a criminal that actually did the shooting and, you know, with an illegal firearm? I mean, don't get me started, Mike. It's just so crazy.
Well, let me shift gears and ask you one of the points, the principles on your website is active fatherhood. And I was so happy to see that on your website, because the destruction of our family is something that is being done, I think, to all races in our culture right now.
Yep.
And you know, we see all these messages in media and pop culture that families are bad and that motherhood doesn't even exist now, we're told, which is crazy. Right. I mean, try saying that 30 years ago, you know, your mom would slap you silly if you said
absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
But fatherhood is critical.
Absolutely.
And fatherhood is something that, you know, especially the black community is sort of known for having a lot of single moms who are burdened with having to raise a child by themselves without the father being there. How do you work to bring that cohesion to whole family units so the mother and father can help raise those children?
Excellent. Excellent. First of all, we go to LBJ, you know, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and we go to his infamous quote where he says, look, we're going to, you know, have those N-words voting for us for the next 200 years. Part of his scheme was to literally decimate the black families, especially by virtue of the welfare systems in that. So a lot of people aren't aware, but they used to send people around to these homes of these women that were on welfare and then encourage them. Look, if you got rid of your husband, or if he just left the house, then you and your kids can get more support from the government. And Jeez. So it was a literal thing that was happening. And so we went from having over 70 or 80% fathers inside the home, happily raising, co-parenting and raising our children in the, in the 1930s, to by the time we came to, now it's completely flipped, right? So we have 72% of single family households led by women right now. So no father, no males anywhere to be found. So what we encourage people is, look, if you really care about your children, if you care about crime, if you care about poverty, social anthropologists have already done the studies. They said the two biggest factors for reducing crime and poverty in America, number one, have a father in the home, ideally. Now, I know we have a hookup culture, so I know it's unrealistic for a large percentage to, be fully reconciled and rectified in that home, because you may have 3, 4, 5, 6 different baby mamas, right? I mean, some NBA players have, 10, 12 baby mamas. So, I mean, how do you do that, right? So what we encourage fathers is, look, the children just need connection. And what we mean by that is just be yourself. You don't have to wait until you're the perfect dad or you have everything together. No. Go to them now and connect with them and let them know you're loved. I did not abandon you. I was going through my own stuff and I'm sorry. Hey, I'm connected. Let's remain connected. Let's rebuild that bond. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to live in the house. They just need connection at the very minimum. Mm-hmm. So we encourage fathers, this is not a picture of perfection. You don't have to be perfect. You just go to your children and reconnect, because that is the critical area. Okay. Now, number two is, if you can reconcile, we encourage fathers to get married. If you and the young lady are, you just had a spat or something like that, and it can be reconciled, please do that, because this is absolutely critical for helping to raise our children. A lot of our children right now are being maligned and abused by the school systems that are telling them, look, you're not really a boy or you're not really a girl. You could be a furry. You could be a this. You could be a that. Biologically, that has nothing to do with it. I mean, and so our kids are being abused and they're being perverted in so many horrible ways. I'm sure you guys have covered it a lot, so I'm not going to go into that. But but if a father was there, a strong figure, they would be able to sort of get their sights on this and help correct that perspective for their children and keep them on a relatively straight path. So we encourage everybody, look, to reduce crime and poverty, fathers, get involved, get reconnected with your children, number one. Number two, school choice. They said school choice is the absolute, because what happens is if you have very, very bright children that are going to schools that are underperforming or dilapidated or crime ridden or just completely unsafe, then that very, very bright kid is not going to go because they think that their life is in jeopardy or they're being assaulted or whatever the case may be. And so we're losing a lot of very, very bright children who could excel if given the opportunity to have a different learning environment.
Yes.
But we're losing them completely because they're dropping out. And that sets up generational poverty, because if you don't have a high school diploma, you're pretty much relegated to the systems, right? So crime and poverty is directly related to fatherhood and school choice.
Yes.
So we encourage both.
Well, that's a really important message for our society right now. And, I just think if our media, our mainstream media, if they really cared about the black community or black children in America, they would just delete all those voices of division and invite you on every show, you know, to give these positive messages.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and it's not hard to do. I mean, it's, you know, I've just been talking to you and it's been positive, and these messages are, you know, are pure and holistic, and they, like you said, they cross all, you know, ethnicities. So it's not a targeted message just for this one or that one. Literally everyone has a father and a mother. And so we can all gain from these positive influences, you know, being brought back into our lives. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I know we're just about out of time here, but I just got to say, in wrapping this up, I've never understood judging people by their skin color or just skin deep or just their looks, even, frankly. I've never understood it. And I'm always shocked at how easily so many people can be distracted by the surface properties of what other people look like. Again, also, it could be on the scale of, you know, like beauty, beautiful versus ugly. For example, you have these celebrities that look beautiful, and then they're invoked by the CDC to push like a vaccine propaganda because they look beautiful. Then people are going to listen to them. And I'm like, just because someone looks beautiful, regardless of their color, doesn't mean that they know anything about the science of immunity or anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just can't believe that people so easily judge others by shallow properties.
Yes. So it all came out about, again, once Darwin did his job with saying, hey, there is no God. We all came from evolution, this muck. You know, it's all by chance. We're all here. We're still climbing the evolutionary scale. That is when we actually had then conversations of one ethnicity being superior over another. If we all believe that there was a God, a divine creator, then certainly he's not a respecter of person. He's just creating humanity. And that's how it pretty much was until Darwin came out with his, you know, his main proclamation that, you know, there is no God and we all evolved, and therefore some evolved faster than others, and therefore, you know, you have some that are more superior than others, and therefore, and so that's why we have. So when we see that today where people are strictly judging and assessing others based on skin color, that is Darwinism in effect.
That's it wild. Is. Yeah. Yeah,
it is. It's amazing because we have it being done by all races and all people of all skin colors to other people. You know, the black supremacy is just as dangerous as white supremacy, which is just as dangerous as Hispanic, whatever.
And it's tormenting to children today to, you know, bring them into grade school and they haven't studied history yet, let's say, but to say to a child, oh, all the white children stand over here, you're all guilty, you're all racist, you're all horrible children because you're white, because of things that happened in the past, and to just throw guilt on them, that's just creating more division too, right?
Teaching children hate, what we call, so we go around the country as well, and we do anti-critical race theory training and that kind of stuff as well. So what it literally does, we're helping parents to understand this, look, most of us didn't even understand hate as an emotion until we were fully matured. It's probably some, you know, early adulthood or when we became adults. While we were growing up, hate, I mean, we may have disliked people. We may have had some, you know, some little spat here and there, you know, growing up. But it was that emotion of hate is something that is very mature, right? And when you teach children how to do this, it is literal child abuse.
That's evil. Yeah.
It's very evil. It's literal child abuse, and no parent should stand for that, which is why you should, if you find a class that's teaching this nonsense, lessons that are infused with critical race theory, you must report it and tell the teacher, this is not acceptable. My child must not feel that they're inferior or superior. My child must just be a child. Can you just teach them? That's it.
And, you know, final comment, a little bit off topic, but I don't know how old you are, but when I grew up, I mean, we had fun, just all of us in school on Halloween, and the cafeteria served like Taco Tuesday, you know, and we could dress up on Halloween. You could dress up in a sombrero and a and a mustache, and it wasn't called cultural appropriation.
Right.
You know, it was just, I mean, even when I was in college, we had like ethnic food day on campus, and you would go and, oh, here's some Malaysian food and, you know, food from all around the world. Here's some Thai food and whatever. But today, like if you weren't a Malaysian person in the Malaysian booth,
right,
if you were like a white guy in the Malaysian booth, then you would be attacked as cultural appropriation.
That's right.
There's so much intolerance now. It's insane. You can't even do anything that's ethnically global minded. You can't dress. You can't eat food. Nothing.
Yes.
It's crazy.
We have become so racially sensitive that we literally become racially intolerant.
That's it.
We don't know how to even see people as people anymore. We're always viewing people through a lens, and a lens of suspicion or hatred or guilt or whatever. And we've got to get beyond this. We're adults. We need to figure this out. If you go to our website, I think you'll have the links there.
Yeah.
We do provide training that really gets to the root of this stuff and really helps to build teams, again, that are trusting and encouraging and supportive within workplaces or small groups. And glad to do that. Again, my book, Woked Up, gives you chapter and verse, private letter, everything fully footnoted from the taproot of white supremacy and racism in America. It takes you through it. I've had, if you know Bill Federer, who was a modern day historian, he actually wrote the endorsement for the book along with a couple others. But wow. He said, look, Kevin, I've written a lot about Marx and Darwin. And he said, I never, ever put these connections. This is unbelievable. I mean, he was floored with the work.
See, that's why it's critical to educate people about history and how this all ties together. We got to connect the dots.
Absolutely. And so all of these resources are out there for you. This book is a must. It gives you all of the talking points that you need in order to bring your woke friends, family, children, grandchildren, to bring them along to the truth. They can be woked up as long as they're not rigidly ideologically leftist, progressive Marxists. But if they're just like moderate, they just think that the culture has kind of sucked them in, you can bring them back, have
Good
them
point.
Get, expose them to the truth and let them then make their decision. But the truth is here. You can get the book at within 2 days from Amazon. Again, it's okay. Woked Up.
Woked Up.
Woked Up. And,
your
last
channel,
name McGarry.
Your channel on YouTube is Y'all Woked Up University. And
yes. Yes, that's also exciting. That on that channel, I do 1 minute current events news, give you my perspective in a non-woke format. Again, it's just 1 minute shorts. So you don't have to sit through an entire news clip or anything like that. It's just giving you a quick hit as to what's happening today and how to view it in a non-woke, kind of format. So that's a very fun thing to do. If you go to my YouTube channel, it's Y'all Woked Up University.
Well, I like
that's there.
I like the name, and the reason it's funny, and you're going to love this. I'm releasing a new hip hop song pretty soon, and it's called "I'm Sorry Y'all Had to See This Too," and it's about the horrors
that's
of
good.
A lot of the stuff that, including depopulation and abortion and transgenderism and mutilation and so on. But we're covering a lot of the same topics, so. We're doing whatever we can to get the word out there in all these different mediums. But I appreciate you so much, Kevin. You're doing amazing work. I'm thankful to God that you are here on this planet in the same time that we are all here, because this is when you're needed the most.
Wow, Mike, that's a big compliment. I do thank you as well. You are an entrepreneur, an innovator, and a leading voice on a lot of these issues with your Natural News and with Brighteon. So just continue the work, man. I mean,
We shall, trust me.
Let's stay connected as well, brother. You know, we're in this fight together. So let's continue to chop it up and stay connected. And I'll come on your show any other time as well.
We will do that. Stand by after the recording. I'll give you my cell number. And then also remember, you're invited to have a channel on Brighteon.com and put all your, put all your videos there, put all your content there.
Very nice of you. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, We'll connect our team with you so you can get approved for, you know, unlimited video usage and everything right away. But anyway, awesome. Stand by after the interview. I'll get you connected. Just thank you for being here. I'm sorry I kept you over a little bit, but this is just
it's good. It's good. I can go on, you know, speaking with you, man, we can go on and on. So it's been great. Thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I feel honored to have you on. So that's it, folks. So for the listeners here, just want to remind you, feel free to repost this interview, of course, on your own channels, on your own, you know, accounts and different platforms and so on. And be sure to visit Kevin McGarry's website. It's everyblm.com, everyblm.com. And for those of you who are business owners, check out his corporate training. Bring him in for the anti-CRT training and to teach real unity and cohesion. And frankly, talk about building effective teams. If all your people are getting along, then your company is going to do better. So, you know, there's a bottom line reason to bring in this kind of training as well. But thank you all for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. And remember, I built this platform so that we can have uncensored conversations just like this one. God bless you all. Thank you for listening. Take care. A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.